I'm Jonathan Goldstein, host of Wiretap. Each week you're invited to listen in on my telephone conversations, whether funny, sad, wistful, or even slightly strange. You never know just what you might hear on Wiretap.
I mean, I knew you had a show. I just didn't think that people actually listen to it.
Howard,
that's the breadth of your genius, Jonathan. It's not just that you're funny, but you can be cripplingly, poignantly depressing.
The Wiretap Archives, available on CBC Listen, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. So, if you suddenly checked your bank account, you know, opened up the app on your phone and saw that you had billions and billions and billions of dollars, what would you do with it? Would you party like there's no tomorrow? Would you see the world? Would you get one of those toasters with four slots? Or would you try to make a difference? These are all the problems that Molly Wells is wrestling with. Well, maybe not the toaster, but Molly was married to a tech billionaire. He cheated on her. They broke up. She's trying to figure out what to do with her $87 billion settlement, and she's trying to be a better person along the way, but it doesn't always work out.
Are you ready to move on to the next sauce? Caribbean Scorch. Shoes coming off.
Let me tell you something, Sean. I have $87 billion. I could buy you and this whole studio, and I could shut it the f*** down. I could kill everybody in here and get away with it.
All right. I think maybe we should wrap this up.
That's Molly Wells on a fictionalized episode of the web show Hot Ones. Fictionalized because Molly Wells is a character in the Apple TV show Loot, played by one of the modern legends of comedy and TV and film, Maya Rudolph. Maya Rudolph did 7 seasons as a cast member on Saturday Night Live, impersonating everyone from Donatella Versace to Oprah to Beyonce. We also talk a little bit about her time starring in the movie Bridesmaids, which has been called one of the best comedies of the 21st century. And Maya Rudolph grew up in show business. Her mom was the late singer Minnie Riperton, who had a big hit in the 70s called Lovin' You, a song that was co-written by her dad, Richard Rudolph, who has been part of some of the careers of the biggest artists of all time, especially his work with Stevie Wonder. I mean, we talk a little bit about her parents as well. Loot has just returned with its 2nd season on Apple TV+. Maya Rudolph is a producer on the show, and I got to chat with Maya over Zoom from California. Hi, Maya. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. That was such a perfectly described encapsulation of the show.
You think that was okay? That got it?
I think you got the job. I think it was great.
What did you like about it when you first got the script and started reading it? What was appealing to you about you?
All of what you said. I think, you know, if you had all that money, what would you do with it? Would you use it for good? But also, wow, that's a lot of money. Isn't that kind of fun to delve into? And so the comedy, I think, probably comes mostly from that world of billions and billions and billions and what that could possibly look like.
What are you learning about that world? When I was talking to the folks from Succession, you know, a couple of them came on the show and I would talk to them about, you know, because these are actors who are presumably going to nicer hotels and these are actors who are presumably going to like nicer restaurants. But they each told me that like actually getting to play in the world or even act in the world of billionaires is a completely different thing. What did you notice about this world of the mega rich?
It's funny, a lot of the people that, I think a lot of billionaires are watching this show, which was kind of fascinating. I feel like people stop me and tell me like, oh, it's really accurate. This is really, really? Because we're just having fun and kind of making stuff up as we go along, you know? This sky's the limit element to it is what I think is really propelling that. Like, we're trying to look in the news and see what is going on and all the things that people are doing and all that. And I will say, doing the show, I can't unsee what billionaires are doing left and right. It's fascinating, and there's just so much going on. People want to spend their money in very interesting ways.
When you say you can't unsee it, now that you've like been part of the show of like, you know, playing the sort of billionaire, all of a sudden you're reading the news a little bit differently?
For sure. I mean, I don't think of, you know, can I bathe myself in an exotic oil that is from an extinct animal when I wake up in the morning. But I'm sure a billionaire has figured that out by now. And I did make that one up. That's not a thing. But, you know, I think it's just been really fun to look at what's going on in the world. And I think this idea of creating a character who wants to help, but has been coming from a place of just spending the wealth and enjoying the wealth, has been a great opportunity to talk about things that are going on in the world.
I thought you did a really good job with the beginning of the second season, that Vogue questionnaire spoof thing you guys did.
Yeah, the 73 questions.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
Hey, Molly. Thanks for having us. Ready to answer 73 questions.
Is that one of them? Just kidding. Come on in.
Your house is gorgeous. Tell me about it.
Well, I sold my old house. I'm downsizing, so I donated the proceeds and moved into this little beach cabana.
How many pools do you have here?
Just the five. Show me your soul.
That's like a game I think I could play. Like, I wish that were a cocktail party game. It's just so fun for someone to ask you questions while you're walking and have you come up with an answer without blinking an eye.
But you also did a great job at, like, whenever I watch those things, I never really know whether they're real answers or maybe, like, why their cadence is like that. Like, I don't want to say anyone in particular, but they'll be like, the question will be like, how many pairs of sandals do you own? And they won't say, like, I own four. They'll be like, oh, just four. Like, they'll have this weird cadence.
I'm glad that you enjoyed that. That was probably the most fun part of it for me. I just think it's performative, and I think it is a choreographed. I've never personally done it, so I don't know how they do it, but I felt like it feels like they've worked through it before. They've worked out the steps before, so they know what the answers are going to be. So it's a bit stifled, which I find really, really funny.
It was also a nice moment to kind of see your SNL-ness come out in doing a parody of something that was really well known, and I got a real kick out of that because, of course, you know, I think you can probably tell by my age and beard, I would be in the target years of watching SNL in college when you were on.
Thank you. Yes, we have the same beard, you and I.
I wasn't going to mention it, but as long as you did.
It's Saturday Night Live with Maya Rudolph.
I heard a story that you've told a bunch of times about your audition for SNL, but there's a detail of it that I've always been sort of curious about. I've heard you talk about, and hopefully maybe you might fill in the blanks here, you were told by your manager or your agent not to audition for SNL. And then you go on to say, you know, so I ended up submitting a tape a little bit later and I got cast. What I've never heard you talk about is why anyone would ever tell you in show business, why did they tell you not to audition for SNL?
I guess there was like some opinion about the contract that year, which never really came to light. So I don't even know why I was told that. And I was just really young and impressionable and thought, oh, that person knows what they're doing. I should listen to them. And it was a really good lesson in that's not always the case. Just because people seem like they know what they're talking about doesn't mean that they know what they're talking about. Thank God it worked out. But yeah, it was a weird one. And I really thought, like, you know, I've got to do it the right way. They'll be next year, you know, but it's not that, you know, if you don't come one year, they don't say like, hey, you didn't show up last year. You should audition this year. It's not like that. So it was lucky that I was still performing at my theater at the Groundlings, and we were videotaping, like true videotape, actual tapes. We were videotaping our shows that we were doing. I was doing the Sunday Company, which is a weekly Sunday show of pieces that we created. So that was really lucky that I was able to submit a VHS tape.
Was there a moment of like, no, I don't care what they say. I'm submitting this VHS tape. Like, this is something I want. Because it was a dream of yours since you were a kid, right?
It was a dream of mine, yeah. And I was pretty devastated that I didn't, you know, I was trying to follow the guidelines of what sounded like was the timing of what was right to do. And so I was pretty devastated when I thought I wasn't going. I think deep down, I probably was a little relieved because the audition, which, you know, I created an audition and I didn't think it was that great. So what if I had auditioned? You know, I might not have gotten the job at all.
How was the first week?
Well, it was a little bit insane because I came at the end of the 25th season and they only had three shows left. So it wasn't like beginning of the school year, everybody's starting at the same time. I was the only new kid and everybody knew what they were doing. I didn't. So I got there on a Monday and there was no pitch meeting, which is rare, but I think the host wasn't in town that week. So I remember saying to someone, what do we do now? And they said, we write. And I said, till when? And they said, till we're done, like 7, 8 a.m. tomorrow. And I just heard all the doors closing to the offices. And I knew a couple people because of the Groundlings. And so I tried to say hello to those people, but I didn't really know anybody. And it was a pretty lonely, it was a rough time. I weirdly, in retrospect, I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it much, but Zach Galifianakis and I were both there at the same time and we were sharing an office. So there was that. So we would walk back to the hotel together going like, what are we doing here? And he'd say, I don't know. It was wild. And it just sort of like, you know, it was like the river was flowing and I was going along with the current. I was doing whatever anything was told of me. So I wrote pieces, I submitted them and performed in whatever I was cast in and hoped that I got the job. I still didn't even really know until that summer that I got the job.
What just one more SNL question. Like, was there a sketch or was there something that made you go like, oh, okay, I'm no longer adrift in the river. I'm okay. I'm good. This is going to be all right here.
No.
Really?
I mean, maybe like year five after I had my daughter and left and came back and I did the national anthem. I think I thought like, I felt pretty good about that. But I was always incredibly insecure about what I wrote and never felt like, you know what? I got it. It never feels like that ever. No.
I think I just maybe meant like the moment we were not having, like I know Bill Hader talks about like I was just having panic attacks up until a moment where I stopped having panic attacks. So I didn't know if there was like a, you know.
Sure. Like there's that. Yeah, there's that version of it. I mean, I think it's just, you know, incredibly just wanting to do good, wanting to succeed and you know, it's your own version of it, whatever that looks like for you. So whether it's panic attacks or just like, I suck. I'm an idiot. You know, whatever your version of it is. I'm not saying that was mine. I was quoting Scotty J from Boogie Nights, but I'm just saying like that's what it is. It's your version of self-deprecation. Yeah.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. More of my conversation with Maya Rudolph coming up.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements?
I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
Can I ask you about Bridesmaids?
Sure.
Yeah, everybody's really sick from that restaurant.
Oh. But it wasn't the restaurant.
Oh, no, no, no.
Lillian,
oh, no.
Where are you going?
I need a bathroom.
No! Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, where are you going?
It's happening. No. It's happening. It's happening. It happened.
What I want to talk about Bridesmaids. So I saw it in theaters and I really loved it. And I thought it was funny and I've watched it a million times. My girlfriend, you know, she'll tell me that it's her bad day movie. If she's having a really, really rough day. And sometimes, I'll be honest with you, and she's probably going to hear this. I come home and she's watching Bridesmaids and I'll kind of go like, oh, okay, something went down.
Wow. So it's the quintessential, that makes it a comfort movie if it's the bad day movie. I mean, I don't personally have that relationship to it. So it's so interesting to hear that.
When people come up to you and talk to you about the movie outside of, is there going to be a sequel? What do they tell you about it when they talk to you about it?
They tell me there should be a sequel is the other part of that. But I do hear that a lot. I do hear that they've seen it so many times and that it's their, you know, it's their feel good movie. I like the term bad day movie. That's the first I've heard of it. So I'm going to use that and give your girlfriend a percentage. But I think it's so cool to be a part of something like that. Cause I grew up, like, I have those movies for myself growing up. So thinking that you provide that for other people is the highest form of praise. You know, I see people watch it on the airplane sometimes, not knowing that I'm on the flight with them. It's usually weirdly in the air and in the airplane scene, which is weird because we're in the air. I don't know why I'm always seeing that scene.
Hey, buddy. Hey. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm so much more relaxed. Thank you, Helen. I just feel like I'm excited and I feel relaxed and I'm ready to party with the best.
But it happens. Must be like part of the duration of the flight or something. But it's a huge compliment.
Do you ever go tap the people on the shoulder on the airplane and go, hey, it's me?
No, but that's a really good idea. I should just, I should do that next time and say like, you know that scene you're watching? I'm gonna reenact it for you. You stand up. You be Kristen. I'll be me. Sometimes I find it. I had a flight attendant once coming around. You know how they have snacks sometimes, and she was like, "Can I offer you an apple?" And I said, "No, thanks." And she looked at me like, "An apple?" Absolutely. This is from something. What is she saying? And then she's like, it's from Bridesmaids. I said, it is. She said, yeah, you said it. I was like, honey, I don't remember all the things I said. I'm sure I did. How am I supposed to remember that?
I don't know if I remember it either. Where do you say that?
Thank you. Was that like 15 years ago? And I didn't even write it.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. You're in the middle of my conversation with Maya Rudolph, the Emmy-winning comedian. An alumnus of Saturday Night Live. She's back with season two of her hit Apple TV show, Loot, playing the billionaire divorcee Molly Wells. He doesn't, if you're going to come up to her on the plane, maybe open with a hello before you start getting into the dialogue of her films. So this music that Sam's playing for you right now is very special to Maya. This is the late Minnie Riperton and a song called Baby, This Love I Have. Baby, I'm trying to show you. Minnie Riperton doesn't get talked a lot about anymore, but at one point she was just this unbelievable singer, 5-octave vocal range, but sadly passed away when Maya was just 6 years old. Minnie Riperton was Maya's mom. This song was co-written and produced by her dad, Richard Rudolph, the acclaimed musician and songwriter who is still with us. And it's a song that's been sampled a lot, including by A Tribe Called Quest. So when I heard Tribe Called Quest in an episode of Loot, I had a feeling it might be meaningful. I wanted to ask Maya about that. It was interesting to hear Tribe Called Quest because we were talking before we came in that your Tribe Called Quest sampled your parents' music. Back in the days on the boulevard I landed, we used to kick routines and the presence was fitting. It was I, the abstract, and me, the five-footer. I kicks the mad
style, so step off the Frankfurter. Yo, Fife, you remember. Yeah, quite a bit.
Quite a bit. Did you know that growing up? Were you listening to Tribe and going like, cause I know you're a great music fan. Were you listening to Tribe and going like, that's mom and dad?
Very much so. I was really excited about it. I felt so cool because it was also a band. It was a band that I liked and they thought that my parents were cool. And I felt like, wow. And then I got to meet Q-Tip and I thanked him for putting me through college because that was always the joke that me and my dad would say. I was like, yeah, it's Tribe Called Quest put you through college. But honestly, it's such an incredible compliment to be used in that way by musicians that you respect. So it was like a whole twofold cool experience. And I love that I'm taking credit for it. And I literally have nothing to do with it. Loving you is easy 'cause you're beautiful. Making love with you is
you have memories of your mom singing, of like watching her on stage or anything?
On stage, yes, absolutely. My parents used to take me and my brother on the road when we were pretty little, before, you know, school, all the school years got in the way. But yeah, being on the road with my parents was pretty fun, I gotta say. And in those days, I didn't even realize the whole mashup of probably what influenced me a lot, which was, it wasn't just music, it was also comedy. I was looking at an old home movie and the marquee said Minnie Riperton and the Smothers Brothers. You know, they would, a lot of times they would go, people would go on tour together. My mom did a lot of stuff with Richard Pryor and Flip Wilson. And it was all kind of a mashup.
Oh, that's so cool. Cause I was wondering how you ended up doing comedy when your family's so musical.
I don't really know. Yeah. I do think that it was just kind of like all in there at the same time. And I think that comedy and music are cousins. They're kind of the same thing they're the same language, but spoken in two different ways, you know? I mean, my parents are really young and really funny. And I feel like musicians want to be comedians and comedians want to be musicians. And sometimes they're both.
I was listening to you playing music. I remember watching the Rentals video on Much Music in Canada for Friends of P, and it was Matt Sharp, right? Matt Sharp, who was in Weezer for the Blue Album and for Pinkerton. Mm-hmm. And I think the crossover was he was in the Rental. The Rentals were happening at the same time as Pinkerton. Were you in the band the same time that he was in Weezer too?
He recorded it, I think, after one of those records. I just gotten out of college and my girlfriends were in a band called That Dog. And
Yeah.
They had sung on a couple of them, Rachel and Petra had sung on the record. And it was Matt's project. So he was just selecting all these great LA musicians that he loved. And then when it was time for him to go on the road, he needed somebody who didn't have a job, basically. And so Rachel said, oh, my friend Maya sings and plays keyboards. And so I just went on the road with him.
Doing the ooh-ooh-oohs.
Ooh-ooh-oohs. Me and Sherry, yeah.
Can we hear it? We have some of the live stuff.
Cowboy gal, so won't you look my mom over? I got time for a chat, so won't you tell me my future?
That sounds great. It sounds great, man. It sounds really good.
So cute. I was such a little baby.
Little Maya. You were open for...
I was such a little Maya.
You were on opening for Alanis Morissette, and it's a Canadian show. I got to point that out. What do you remember from touring with Alanis? That was Jagged Little Pill. That was pretty wild.
Alanis was a lovely host. We spent Thanksgiving together as band families. She was very gracious. And we did a lot of hacky sacking with her and her band. And I got to know her drummer, Taylor, at the time, Taylor Hawkins.
The late Taylor Hawkins, who we just lost
last
year.
The funniest, coolest, just like had that great energy of like having fun people to hang out with on the road, because the road is very confusing. And we would sleep on a bus and wake up in a different city. So getting to be their opening act for a month was fascinating and fun. And they were sweet. And we went bowling together and stuff like that.
I find this whole music thing with you really interesting. I find your musical impressions really interesting. I find the whole idea of you as a musician really very, very interesting as a comedian.
Thank you. I think it's interesting too. I think it's, I'm far more comfortable with it than I used to be. I think I used to sort of like, anything that comes from your house is embarrassing, right? Like music came from my house. So like, I liken it to turkey burgers. When I was a kid, we didn't eat red meat. At home we ate turkey burgers, and that was really embarrassing. And now turkey burgers are cool. And I'm like, yeah, I ate turkey burgers. So my point is like, being who you are is like embracing your inner turkey burger.
If I get that on the shirt, I'll give you a percentage.
Please. And then I'll split it with your girlfriend, who should really just be your wife at this point. She and I have talked.
We're working on it. Maya, nice to meet you. Thanks for doing this.
It's a pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
That's my conversation with Maya Rudolph, Emmy-winning actor, legendary comedian, relationship consultant. You can see Maya in season 2 of the show Loot on Apple TV Plus right now. Maya plays the lead character, billionaire divorcee Molly Wells, and Maya is also an executive producer on the show. That's it for us today. The other conversation we have up today is about the American R&B singer Jackie Shane. I didn't know about Jackie Shane until I started hosting the show, and it's a mortal sin that I didn't, because I mean, groundbreaking artists. It's hard to come more groundbreaking than Jackie Shane. Grew up singing in the 50s and 60s as a black trans woman. She had a really big hit in Canada called Any Other Way. She becomes a recluse. Her music is discovered. It's re-released. She's planning on going on tour. She passes away. And now there's a new documentary about her life. So the directors of the documentary are here, which is exciting enough, but they brought along with them an unreleased, never-before-heard Jackie Shane song. Go check that out wherever you get the podcast, just to learn a little bit more about Jackie Shane's story. All right, we'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.